If you have kids or will soon have kids in your family, then you will want to listen to today's episode. Maria Gianfilippo is the owner, founder of Organic Speech Therapy, and is back on the podcast this week. Maria has a passion for helping kids and families navigate speech development from an early age. Now, she's a speech language pathologist helping a variety of patients with speech therapies, not only helping the young kids and families with their speech development, she also helps older adults as well. Now, this is something I wish my wife and I learned before our firstborn, as far as the tools and tips and tactics to help your child develop their speech. There's a lot that goes into it, and there are simple things you can do to help your child develop speech, and we'll cover some of that in today's episode. We also talk about some of Maria's favorite books for babies, what hinders speech development, and some practical tips, like I mentioned, that you can take with you to help your child develop their speech. Let's jump right in. What's up, Maria? Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, round two. Mm-hmm. I was just listening to our first podcast.
Same.
You too?
Yeah, I was listening to it before because I'm like, oh, let's what think about talk how far about? We've come. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah. I think it's... I didn't look at the date, but when I was listening to it, I talked about DM's age, and I think DM was like a year old at that point. Now she's four.
Yes.
So maybe 3 years.
Yeah, it's just about 3 years.
You might have been like the first guest in the pod, like the first few that I did. Crazy. Yes. Uh-huh. 3 years ago. Yeah, I was cringing, like listening to myself and like some of the questions and how I was speaking and stuff.
I thought you sounded great.
Were you judging me?
No.
So speech therapy, you're a speech language pathologist. Mm-hmm. What is speech therapy?
So speech therapy is a profession that helps with communication, swallowing, and cognitive linguistic disorders. So it actually is like a huge blanket term for a lot of different areas. Speech pathologists work with kids, they work with adults, they work with anyone, any age throughout the lifespan. And they help with, like I said, the communication disorders, speech disorders, language. We even touch on swallowing and cognitive linguistic deficits. So it's really a broad field that covers a lot, but focuses in on those areas.
Yeah. I know you work with like different age groups and stuff. Is there a focus, like as you're going to school, like do you tend to like focus in on a certain age group or I guess like speech issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's generally like two tracks that we see to simplify it. There's usually a pediatric track or a medical track. So if you're in the medical area, you can work with kids and adults, but a lot of times it's working with people with a stroke or Parkinson's, things like that. And then the pediatric track is people who work at schools, mostly with kids, birth to elementary, high school age. So that's just to simplify it. There's all sorts of so many little areas of expertise. But yes, people after a while of working in the field usually get into their own little niche.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you know what you wanted to do? Like when you were going to school, like, did you know like what niche you wanted to fall into or?
So ironically, I just wanted to work with adults.
Because, oh yeah.
Yeah. I love neurology and like that side of it and the medical aspect of it. So in grad school, you have opportunities to work with kids and adults. So they, you know, give you a nice umbrella experience of like all populations. And then you kind of choose from there. But yeah, I just wanted to work with adults. I found helping people after strokes, helping with their swallowing difficulties, like so fascinating. And especially with the cognitive aspect of like the memory and thinking and organizing your thoughts. So I actually always wanted to work with adults. I loved kids and I love the kids like birth to 3 years old, the toddlers, like the little kids. Mm-hmm. But initially I was set on working with adults.
So what changed?
You know, I think that's kind of funny. I always worked with both. at the first job that I worked at. So I would see both kids and adults. And I just kind of got into this trajectory of working with kids. I always say that's like kind of the path that I thought God was leading me on. And then I just kind of kept following it. And then it just blossomed into this whole practice, because I primarily work with kids now, like all kids. And I would have never thought that I was going to do that before, which is funny.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. Like, if you allow like that to happen, or allow like your path to kind of like meander with like whatever is, whatever seems to make sense at the time, right? Instead of being like, this is what I'm doing and I'm sticking to this regardless what happens.
Yeah. Like, just being open to it and to the opportunities, because I constantly, especially when I first started the practice, I was like, nope, I'm going to see adults more than kids. And just like all these opportunities came up to see kids. And then, you know, the programs that I started, all this kind of stuff. And I absolutely love it. But it is funny about just staying open to what opportunities are coming up, where you're being led to, and then just seeing where it can go from there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What's involved with speech therapy? Like, for anybody that hasn't had speech therapy, or I guess it might be different for like adults and toddlers. So I guess let's talk about the difference between those two.
Sure. So trying to think of like where to start with this. I'm going to start with toddlers.
Okay.
So the whole like process of traditional speech therapy is you always start with an evaluation. So in the toddler world, parents usually see that their kids aren't saying enough words as they should for their age, or they think that. So they start talking to a speech pathologist and seeing, you know, are they meeting their developmental milestones for language? Are they not? Do they need a little extra help? And so then we do an evaluation and we look at their language skills and where they fall along the lines of typical versus not typical. And then from the evaluation is where we determine if speech therapy is needed, and how much, how often, how frequently. And similar for adults, although usually with adults, it's not something that's developmental. It's been caused by an accident or something like that. And then they're having impairments in their speech, their language, their thinking, their swallowing. So then we evaluate them from there and see what they need.
And then is it practicing like the words? Like, for an adult, it's just like practicing words over again, like getting like used to saying the sounds, hearing the sounds, the muscles, like all that.
Yeah. We definitely determine like what's causing the impairment. So if it's, for example, if they had a stroke and they're having a hard time saying the words that they want to say, like they can think of what they want to say, but they can't get it out, then we figure out, okay, what's the cause of that? Is the way your muscles are moving? You know, is it some word finding strategies, things like that? And then we practice that.
Okay. Have there been any like since you've been involved in this profession, any new developments or like any new findings that they've discovered with language?
There's always new things in the field. In the toddler world, I think it's become bigger more recently. We've always known that like intervention in the home is best, because it's their home environment. Toddlers learn through interacting with their everyday environment. They learn through imitating their parents, things like that. So we've always known that, but I think it's become more popular for parents to learn what to do at home rather than taking them to a speech therapist, letting the speech therapist go see them, and then taking them after the session and just going home and not doing anything between sessions.
Yeah.
So that's not new, but it's more popular now. Then the way like kids with autism are processing language, this is a whole other like little area.
Yeah.
It's called gestalt language processing. So where they're learning language in chunks rather than single words at a time.
Okay.
So it's almost like a little bit of a backwards type of thing that's kind of recent and new and popular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about like the, before that, like what hinders speech development? So on the toddler side, like what hinders that? Like for where a child isn't meeting those milestones?
Sure. So one big thing is their hearing. So when I say hearing loss, it doesn't mean like an actual loss. But a lot of times kids, especially if they get frequent ear infections, mm-hmm. it's very common for them to get fluid in their middle ears and it muffles the sounds. So when they're learning how to speak, they have to hear the speech sounds. And a lot of times parents will say, oh, there's nothing wrong with their hearing, because I'll ask them to like go get their shoes and they do it. They follow directions just fine. So I know they can hear me, but they need to hear the specific phonemes, the specific sounds, because if they can't hear them, they can't say them. Mm. So it becomes a little trickier for them. So that's common if a child's not talking as soon as they should for their age.
So that's like the first part of like speech development is being able to hear words.
Yeah, because your receptive language, which is how much you understand, develops before or just quicker than your expressive language, so what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So all the time, whenever I see a toddler who's not talking as much, I recommend they go get their hearing checked just to like rule it out as a contributing factor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's hard sometimes because you don't know, like our youngest, she went through a phase where she kept saying, huh, a lot or what, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, are you hearing us or are you not hearing us or are you just like saying that, right? Mm-hmm. She still does it every now and then, mm-hmm. you know, but her language is like far beyond what our firstborn was, right? So mm-hmm. I know it's there, mm-hmm. but you still wonder like, is something wrong with your ears?
Yeah, yeah. Or like, do they think it's fun to say or like, have they heard you say it? And so then they're like, say it all the time.
Yeah.
It's hard to tease out.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. So what, on the other side of that, like what enhances speech development at an early age?
What's up, Palm Harbor? It's your host, Donnie Hathaway. If you are looking to stay up to date with all things Palm Harbor, then visit my website. It's palmharborlocal.com. Super simple. You can sign up there, join the locals, where I'll be sharing more information on local events, local history, and what's happening in Palm Harbor. You know, I really want to create and add more value to you as a listener for spending your valuable time tuning into my podcast. So join me there, keep listening, and remember, together, we keep Palm Harbor local.
So there's lots of things that can enhance speech development and just being like aware of those at home. How we're talking to our toddlers, what we're saying, like filling their world with language really helps. Of just, I'm sure people have heard this all the time, like narrating what you're doing during the day, saying what you would want them to say. Just being very aware of what it is that you're saying and how you're saying it to your toddler, and then what they're interested, like what they're looking at, and really just kind of, you know, building their language skills, exposing them to vocabulary that way.
Mm-hmm. And that's really it. Like it's almost that simple.
Yeah. It's so funny because it's like very simple, but it's also very strategic. It's simple enough that anybody can do it. Any parent can do it, you know, at home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is like most parents, like they just don't know. They don't know to do that. We didn't know to do that until like we started talking to you about that and you came out and helped us with our firstborn. But it's like, where do you learn that? You know?
Yeah. I always say like the same thing, like parents don't always know these things, but like, why should they, you know, like if you didn't go to school to be a speech pathologist or you don't like know one or you're not around kids all the time, it's like, why would you know all these little tiny little details? And there's no handbook on it. And then parents, you know, you're worrying about other things, you know, just keeping your child alive, like feeding them, you know, are they gaining weight? Are they growing? Like, are they moving? There's like so much to think about. So, it's funny. I don't think like parents always know these things. They know some of them, but it's nice to learn them from a speech pathologist. Cause like we said, they're so easy for everybody to do. It's just becoming aware of them.
Yeah. I was listening to a brief podcast today and she gave the example of like our times now of family dynamics and like growing up or raising a child. It's very isolated. Whereas before it was like you grew up in a village and you had help from several people who have the experience and have gone through that process before. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like that's part of that. So now it's like you almost have to like build your village or find your village.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But if you don't know, like those things, like it's hard to understand that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then what are some tips for new parents or soon to be, you know, parents that to help out to make sure that their child like meets those speech, you know, milestones.
Mm-hmm. So if you are an expecting parent or a new parent and you want to make sure your baby, you know, hits that language milestone, like says their first words on time, says as many words as you know, we want them to, it's important to know that there's a lot of steps that develop before their first words. You know, their first words come around the age of one, but before they're doing that, they are developing their eye contact skills. They're imitating your facial expressions. They're babbling, they're cooing, they're laughing, like they're engaging in back and forth interactions with you. So people who have newborns or in that baby stage before a year, some things they can do is just really making sure they're intentional with getting on their baby's level, whether that's like face to face or if they're on tummy time, like laying down with them so they can see your face and, you know, imitating the noises they're making, talking to your baby and just telling them what you're doing so you get in the habit of doing that, and always responding to them if they make, I say, a communication attempt. So like a smile or a laugh, or if they're babbling, like you just respond back to them verbally, and that will do wonders for their language development.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, like as you're walking through that, some of those things, I'm like remembering back, like when we met, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, I remember all that stuff.
Yeah,
like getting on the same level as them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Little things that make big differences.
Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, it's so simple, right? Mm-hmm. It's just knowing like what to do.
Yeah.
What is, like what's the root cause? Is it just like the parents or the environment, like the root cause of any speech delay for toddlers? Is there like genetics involved, or is it typically just the environment that they're in?
So sometimes it's genetic. Like it's not uncommon for parents to tell me, oh, I didn't talk till I was later or till I was three or something like that. Or we have some family members that had a speech delay. So that's definitely a component. You know, the environment, like yes and no, I never say that parents cause a language delay, you know, even if they don't know like all the strategies. We only see that when there's a case of extreme abuse or neglect for a toddler to cause that. So, or for a parent to cause a language delay. So sometimes they're just a little bit late to develop, or if it's not just their language skills, but maybe their motor skills, like sometimes they're just developing later.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be, you know, those things, a combination of things.
Yeah, that makes sense. So again, for like the parents, new parents or soon to be parents, like what are some books that you recommend to read to your kids that are helpful in like developing language?
Yes. I love talking about this. And I just put out a free resource.
Nice.
I'll just send to you about all my favorite books. But when they're little, like birth to 3 months, basically they love to hear their parents' voice. So you can read anything to them. You can read poems, you can read something that you're reading, like a book that you're reading out loud.
Okay.
And then as they get a little older, it's like those black and white books helps with their vision. After 3 months, I always recommend books that are simple and repetitive. So like Where's Spot? It's a classic one a lot of people have, but it's so good because it's simple. It repeats the same thing over and over again. Like, where's Spot? Is he under the stairs? No. Is he under the bed? No. So then they can hear that repetition and then they can eventually fill it in. So at that age, like until 1 year old, you just want to keep it super short, super, super simple,
mm-hmm.
matches their attention span. You want to avoid books like Dr. Seuss books or like long poems or long like stories because it doesn't match their attention span. And like Dr. Seuss is not normal language. So they're not going to be talking in rhyme.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's hard for them to understand all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I wrote down some stats here and I just kind of want to get your thoughts and we can talk about it and stuff. So boys 3 to 17, boys versus girls 3 to 17 are more likely than girls to have a voice, speech, language, or swallowing disorder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
You know, I actually am not quite sure like the why behind it.
Yeah.
But in most disorders that we have learned about, even just going to grad school, it's always more prevalent in boys than girls.
Oh, interesting.
I think they just, you know, it's not all the time. Like there's plenty of girls that have a speech delay, but in general, it's more common with boys. I think sometimes they just take a little longer to develop than girls.
Yeah, this was like 9.6% compared to for boys compared to 5.7% for girls.
Yeah, it's just a lot of things are more common in boys of like delays.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right, so the first 6 months of life are the most crucial to a child's development of language skills.
Ah, so they are very important. Yes, I like to say the first 3 years of life.
Okay.
Because the first 3 years are when their brains are the most neuroplastic. So they're the most flexible. They're building new neural pathways. And they're really just like setting the foundation for their development for all sorts of cognitive skills, like for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. The first 6 months, yeah, definitely. I mean, they're just developing at a rapid rate. And you probably see the biggest like jump of skills from birth to 6 months, you know?
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why going back to like the village, you know, example, like, you know, it's helpful to have those people around you from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they say it takes a village, and I see it with,
yes.
I'm not a parent, but like, I'm very close with my sister who has two kids that are young, and it's a lot to do with just parents on their own. So having somebody to come and help, somebody to watch them, like give you some rest as well and just teach them different things. It is important to have a village for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love that. All right. So last one, more than 3 million Americans stutter. So it was like 1% of Americans. Uh-huh. What is a stutter? Like what's the definition of a stutter?
That's a good one. You're making me reach in my brain because I don't specialize in stuttering, but I do know about it. I think they say that it's a different, they just use different neurological pathways in their brain for their speech production.
Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm. If I understand it correctly, and again, I'm not the specialist. That's like one of the niches in our field. But I believe it is a different kind of wiring of the brain for speech production. So then it makes it a little more difficult to get your speech out fluently. We actually call stuttering disfluencies in the speech therapy world.
Okay.
And everybody is a certain percentage of disfluent.
Okay.
So things like an or an those are considered like a disfluency. When someone has a stutter, there are different types of disfluency, like when there's like a long pause, or if you are repeating like the end of a word, that's mm-hmm. a different type of disfluency.
Can you work on those disfluencies and improve them?
Mm-hmm.
Even with like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, definitely.
So no matter what level they are or what type of disfluency you have, like there are things you can practice to improve those.
Yeah, definitely. And it depends on, again, the severity, like different factors like that. Yeah. But there are ways that you can become more fluent. So mm-hmm. if I'm remembering correctly, it's not that it ever goes away fully. It's just you get more fluent speech, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Is that because it's like wired in your brain, like that pathway is still kind of like there?
Mm-hmm.
But you just like made a new connection, a new synapse to like a different way of, or an improved way of speaking, I guess.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like all of us are like, you know, when you're talking about, oh, I was listening to myself like a couple of years ago when I was talking.
Yeah.
You know, when we're speaking, and I do the same, and you know, with myself, I listen to things that I was doing, and you're talking and you're not as fluent sometimes, right? It's like there's a lot more pauses or ums or, and that's like public speaking, of course, but
right.
just any, you know, anytime people are talking, whether they repeat themselves, like those are disfluencies that we all have. It's just, you know, to what percentage and to what extent and what mm-hmm. type.
Yeah. And I think that another in line with this, they said like, I think it was like 2 to 6 was like, it was most common when children have stutters, but usually beyond 6, they've kind of like grown out of them is what they were saying.
Yeah. It's somewhat common or typical for I think it's 3 and under. So if a child starts stuttering under the age of 3, and there's like a lot of different factors that go into this. So if a child is under the age of 3 and they start stuttering, there's no family history of stuttering, and it doesn't last longer than I think 6 months, that's more like typical and will like go away on its own. You know, you just kind of monitor it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they start stuttering after the age of 3, And then there, if there's a family history of it, if they're a boy, I think it's more common in boys. If it persists longer than 6 months, and then if there's those different kind of stutters, like I was telling you about, like repeating the end of the word versus the beginning of the word, or repeating whole phrases or sentences like that, depending on the type of stutter, is it's more likely to stick around.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. So if people, new parents, they want to get your help, want to get your advice, where is the best way for them to connect with you?
So the easiest way is on Instagram at Organic Speech Therapy, PLLC. That's at the end. They can always send me a DM. I love chatting with parents there. And then I also have a website, organicspeechtherapy.com, and it has a little form on there that they can fill out to be contacted.
Yeah, perfect. And it's super helpful for anybody that's listening. Like you, like I said before, you came out and helped us with DM, and it was easy and just like taught us so much about like just that development side of it. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. You guys were great to work with. Yeah. It's so fun to see the progress and then hear about her now too.
Yes. And then Reese as well, like her speech. So yeah. So go check her out. Thanks, Maria.
Thanks.